Welcome to the second sermon in this new series I'm releasing, 100 Sermons in 100 Days. I'm Mike Adams. Appreciate you joining me today. And the topic for today is humility versus pride and what we need to do in order to be ready for what's coming. Because there's going to be a significant event in 100 days, give or take. And it's not just the obvious event that you're thinking of. It's not just the election, for example. But also there are things that I know that are coming in about 100 days that will be, well, we'll just say significant. So if you missed it, yesterday's sermon, which was sermon number one, was about the armor of God, the molecular armor of God, citing Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10, but also 11, of course, and other verses. And that's definitely worth taking a look at because it lays out the core philosophy of what we believe and what we teach, which is that if we are to act with faith in alignment with God's wishes for us, we must also be of pure blood. We must purify our bodies to the greatest extent that we can in terms of avoiding toxins, avoiding pollutants, avoiding pesticides and herbicides and glyphosate and heavy metals and toxic junk food and all the plasticizer chemicals and all the toxic fragrance ingredients, you know, the toxic food coloring ingredients. All of these toxins that I've been teaching about for over 20, I think it's coming up on almost 25 years, actually. There's a book I wrote many years ago called Grocery Warning in the early days that talked about many of these same things. And you're going to see how much that matters in terms of your spiritual preparedness, but also your physical, cognitive, and neurological preparedness for what's coming. It's all related. But I believe that we must be clean in our foods, in our supplements, in our superfoods, and in our daily habits. We have to have clean water, for example. We need to be able to detoxify our physical bodies so that our brains will work better and then our minds work better. That's the non-physical part. And then our spirit works better. We literally are more effective in body, mind, and soul, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. We're more effective when we are more pure and when we have eliminated the toxins that cause sickness and disease. So we'll talk about that a lot more in other sermons coming up. Today's sermon is about humility versus pride. And I'm going to quote from Proverbs because, well, Proverbs, in fact, I'm going to quote from Proverbs a lot in these sermons because there's so much wisdom in such a compact form, right? But if you go to Proverbs 11 and you just read the first four lines, or maybe we'll read a little bit more, but it says very clearly, the Lord detests dishonest scales, that is, those who cheat, but accurate weights find favor with him. So it means that if you carry out your life with a sense of honesty in the way that you deal with others, that you operate with integrity, that you pay the bills that are legitimately due to you, if you borrow money from someone, you pay them back. If you promise to pay them a certain amount, then you pay the full amount. So then God will find favor with you just for being honest. That's kind of cool, isn't it? To note that you'll have credit with God just for being a decent person. It's like, yes, actually, yes, because so many people are not decent people. So many people are dishonest or cheaters or liars or, you know, deceivers. And of course, they don't get any credit for that at all. They get the scorn of God. But if you just treat other people with a sense of honesty in your business, in your personal life, in your faith, in everything that you do, then God will grant you his favor. And I've said before in other formats that God's favor is a cosmic currency. So we think about currencies in things like dollars, which is a counterfeit fake currency, or some people might think about currency in terms of cryptocurrency, such as Bitcoin, which is a digital form of representing value. But none of those go with you when you pass away from this realm, right? When you transition into the heavenly realm, do you bring Bitcoin with you? No. Do you bring dollars with you? Oh, for sure, no. I mean, there might be a special place in hell for bringing hyperinflated dollars with you or something. Like, yeah, you can bring all your money to hell. And there's hyperinflation in hell. You can't afford anything. Oh my gosh. That's how crazy that could be. But the currency that counts with God is the currency of God's favor. So as you are earning that currency, which you can only earn through your behavior, through your honest actions, and you can't deceive God because he knows everything. So, and you can't deceive yourself. You can't lie to yourself. You are either acting with integrity, you know, or you're not. And God knows and you know, and that's what counts as your currency. That's what you do take with you. And that's not reflected in your bank account. You can't log into, you know, JP Morgan, Chase, Rockefeller, you know, globalist bank and see how much currency you have with God. Doesn't exist there. Only God can tell you how much currency you have with God. And you either earn it or you lose it every day with the actions that you take and the decisions that you make. Now, if we continue with Proverbs 11, it says, when pride comes, then comes disgrace. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. So those who learn to or choose to operate their lives with a sense of pride, that thinking that I'm the only one that matters, or I'm the best, or I'm responsible for all the success or whatever. You see this a lot with like pop culture stars who think that they're such amazing people because all this success is showered upon them, and they tend to act with this sense of personal pride rather than humility. And then what happens often? They fall. They fall from their perch of power. They fall into disgrace because their success was never rooted in spiritual fundamentals that would allow it to have longevity or sustainability. So they fall from that power and they end in disgrace. Now, what's interesting about this is that any of us may have gone through this pattern in our own lives, especially perhaps in our younger years. Many of us, when we weren't as wise as we are now, right? Because we tend to gain wisdom over time. But perhaps when you were younger, you might have thought that, you don't need God. You know, you're doing great all by yourself. And the pride, you know, you did this. You built that. You did this. I know I used to think that way when I was younger as well. And then at some point, you will experience a fall. Something will collapse. The rug will be pulled out from under you. And you will find out that, hey, guess what? You're not all that. You're not all superhuman. You're not above God. Because it is from the place of humility that we build the foundation for long-term legitimate success in life. And I don't mean that monetarily. I mean living life as a successful human being, contributing to the health and joy and awakening of others around you. That's what matters in terms of, you know, scoring this life. And that only comes from a place of humility, not from pride. So that's the next line from Proverbs 11. And I'll read the two. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. And four more lines that I think are really relevant to this. The integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Wow. Wow. That's so powerful. That's kind of what I was just saying. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath. When you are judged by God, your bank account doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Oh, you have all these treasury bonds? Really? Oh, you're a treasury billionaire bondholder? Who cares? God doesn't care about that. It doesn't matter. It's not going to save you. What's going to save you has nothing to do with that. Righteousness delivers from death, is what it says. And that is standing in truth with God. And that is what grants you entrance into the kingdom of heaven. That's what grants you immortality. That's what makes your life worth living beyond the lifetime itself. That the pattern of righteousness and truth and love and light that you lay down during this life will outlive this life because it comes with you as the currency of God's favor that has been granted to you through this life. So it says it all right there. This is why I have a hard time reading the Bible. You know why? Because I read like four lines and I'm like, whoa, I'm so blown away. And then I have to like think about those four lines. Now, of course, there are parts of the Bible that are not so interesting. It's like, oh, here's all the family tree of this family and that family. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, whatever. That doesn't get me like super excited to just hear about all the genealogy. But this part right here in Proverbs, this is so intense. I can hardly read it without just stopping, and I have to process it, you know? It's so powerful. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. So what are you pursuing in your life? If you're pursuing material wealth, you're doing nothing to forward your progress in God's eyes. Nothing. But if you stand in righteousness, then you earn, in essence, spiritual immortality. And that, it's so valuable you can't put a price on it. And no one can buy it. All the globalists in the world with all the printed fake currency money in the world, they can't buy salvation, can they? They can't. Now, maybe they can find a church that's willing to, you know, take a bunch of money. Hey, here's $1 million. Will you bless me, Father? And yeah, there might be some corrupt churches out there, the same ones pushing vaccines, that would say, okay, we'll bless you, or we'll, you know, ordain you even, whatever, for enough money. But that's not acting with God's permission, is it? That's acting in contradiction to what God teaches. And so that doesn't count. It's like they're buying counterfeit salvation, which is really funny because they're using counterfeit currency, which is the dollar. So if you want to buy counterfeit salvation, you know how there are these fake online diploma mills that will sell you like a fake MBA or, you know, a fake doctorate degree or whatever? Well, you can also buy fake salvation from a church that may be a church recognized by the government, but it's still a fake church because it doesn't stand in congruence with the teachings of God and the demands of God. So think about that. There are no workarounds, folks. You can't trick God. There's no counterfeit salvation. Now, let me share a story with you that just happened to me. For the last several years, I made myself a promise that I would do my best to repair everything that broke in my home or on the ranch. Anything like any kind of common maintenance type of issues, or even taking care of the animals. You know, I have donkeys and I have goats. And you probably know I have a donkey named Hosanna, by the way. And when she became a mother and she gave birth, I picked up her newborn daughter, whose name is Basil, because Hosanna ran away from her daughter. She didn't know what was going on. And I saw that she was running away. I was like, what? So I run over and I pick up this newborn baby donkey that was wet, you know, wet with the afterbirth material. And it was like, oh gosh, it's like wet, soggy, you know, donkey fur. And this thing's actually kind of heavy too. I don't know if you've ever picked up a newborn donkey, but they're not that tiny. They're born, you know, like they're supposed to be able to run in a couple of hours, right? And so I picked up the donkey and I carried it back to its mother, and I helped the donkey stand up and put its nose to be able to suckle its mother. And then it just stood there for a long time, like didn't know what to do. And I'm like, drink the milk, you know, drink the milk. And I'm like, how do you make a baby donkey drink milk? But that was a new experience for the mother and a new experience for the donkey. Now, eventually they figured it out. And then everything was great after that. But I jumped in because, well, you know, I'm committed to doing my best to taking care of these donkeys and other animals. I do the best I can. And there was nobody else who was going to pick up this donkey. There's nobody else who's going to bring them together. So you jump in and you do it. And that attitude, I've had that attitude about a lot of the things in terms of repairs and so on. And I've been talking, you've heard me talk about, you know, plumbing repairs or electrical type of repairs, you know, trying to learn how to do basic things. And I think this is a very important functional skill set that we should all strive to at least entertain. Don't think that we're so special, or if you happen to be someone of material wealth, that you're so wealthy that you could just hire somebody to do everything. Oh, I'll hire a guy, you know, to mow the lawn. or I'll hire a guy to, you know, clean out the chicken cage, or I'll hire a guy to fix the plumbing or whatever. And now I get it. Sometimes you do need help because, you know, HVAC, right? Oh, the air conditioner's down. That's not easy to fix yourself. And half the time it's a broken circuit board. So, you know, you can't really fix that yourself. But for the things that you can fix, I promised myself many years ago that I would do everything I could to fix the things that I can, because I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn how to do things. One of the very first things I did at the ranch is I learned how to build a fence, a goat-proof fence, which means building like H-braces and then having tension wires that go on the diagonal in order to give stability to the H-brace, and then tensioning the fence itself so the goats don't destroy it, because turns out goats love to rub up against the fences, and over time they'll break them. They'll just push them out if you don't have them really, really secured. Goats are fence testers, by the way. So that was one of the very first things I did. And I felt a sense of just simple joy saying, wow, like I never built a goat fence before. Now I know how to do that. And if I had to do it again, I understand the principles and I could do it again. So learning how to do things, although it may seem kind of humbling at first, and maybe you could hire somebody to do it, but what if you did it yourself? What if you learned how to do those skills yourself? Even if there are skills that seem like kind of gross, let's say. For example, I have a chicken house, and yes, I have to rake out the chicken house. And yes, the chickens perch up high in the chicken house, and they poop all over the hay that I have spread out on the floor. They poop up all the hay. And then, you know, they poop it up for a week or two, depends on the humidity, actually. And when the hay gets to be like too much poop all over it, then you get in there and you rake it out. And, you know, that's a messy job to everybody. But if you've never raked out a chicken house, but you have chickens, then are you really caring for the chickens? Are you really the steward of the chickens? Sometimes when we are in positions of caring for other animals or caring for a piece of land, or we are a steward of a piece of land, sometimes there's a dirty job involved. You might have to shovel some mud. You might have to get wet. You might have to get on your knees, which is symbolically important. And speaking of getting on my knees, you know, having made this promise to myself many years ago, I have learned a lot of skills. It's been great. I know how to do a lot of things now that I did not know how to do many years ago. But recently, I had a toilet go bad. Now, I've probably never shared this with you, but I live in a pretty humble place and we only have one bathroom. So I don't have a backup toilet, by the way. I don't have like a guest bathroom. I don't have that. Got one toilet. And this toilet started leaking. There was water coming out at the base, and it was starting to really kind of destroy or weaken the floor around it. And I looked at that. I'm like, oh no, oh no, please, you know, please God, don't make me do this. Cause I'd made this promise. I'm going to do basic maintenance. And then sure enough, God says, okay, here, work on this toilet, plumber, you know, I'm like, no, no, please. So I go online, I'm searching videos like, okay, what's the cause of a leaky toilet leaking at the base? And they're like, oh, you got to remove the toilet, man. You got to take the whole toilet off. You got to rework it. There's this thing called a gasket. It's actually called a closet gasket. I don't know why they use the word closet instead of toilet, but you got to rip this toilet off of this thing, and you got to rework that whole wax ring, as it's known. There's a ring of wax that attaches the base of the toilet to this gasket in the floor, which is just this gaping hole in the floor with kind of a rim around it, right? So I'm like, oh man, oh man. Okay. So thinking, well, I'm not too proud to do this. I can fix a toilet too. I mean, Jesus was a carpenter. And my great-grandfather, by the way, who was also a minister, I'll tell you about him in another sermon here. My great-grandfather built his own church with his own hands. He was a carpenter. So I figured, hey, if my great-grandfather can build a church, surely I can fix a toilet, you know? So I take the toilet off. I mean, yeah, I disconnect the supply line of the water, and I get all the water out of the toilet tank and everything, and then lift it off. It's heavy, and get it out of there. And looking at this gasket, this toilet gasket on the floor, I'm like, oh no, this thing's all kind of sideways. It's not even flat. And all the videos online said, well, here's how to solve it if it's a little bit high, or here's another way to solve it if it's a little bit low. I'm like, no, half of it's high, half of it's low. This thing's all angled. Well, that's a whole nother category of videos. How to fix like angled, crooked closet flanges for your toilet. And that is a whole different process. And by the way, I was getting grossed out by the wax ring on the bottom of the toilet that I took off of it. And so I did do something that I admit this publicly. I couldn't stand to take the wax off that toilet, so I just bought a new toilet. So I did just throw money at that. So I went to the hardware store. I got a whole new toilet because I don't want to mess with this wax ring. Okay. And besides, why not upgrade the toilet anyway? I wanted a toilet that had a full flush on it. I don't want this eco-friendly water-saving flush that doesn't work, right? I want the full power of the gravity of water to do its job. I don't know what a 3-gallon flush or whatever it is. Because, you know, I'm not on city water anyway. I'm out in the country, so it's all my own water anyway. So I got the full flush toilet, upgrade, brand new. I don't have to deal with the wax ring. Well, then it turns out to fix this flange, you have to get this kind of flange extender, and then you have to get a belt sander, and you have to sand it halfway down at an angle, which looked like a very tricky job. But with some effort, a pair of safety glasses, some gloves, and a vise, I was able to get that done. And then the floor was so destroyed underneath the gasket. And bear with me here. I'm not going to make it gross. I'm just describing what I went through to repair a toilet. It was way more than I ever expected. But I had to fix the whole floor, so I had to get a new steel base, and then I had to screw that into the floor, and then I had to drill through that for the gasket screws to attach the gasket to the steel, the new subfloor of steel. And there was a lot of drilling and a lot of, you know, attaching screws, and it was quite an ordeal. And then I had to put this slanted piece on. I got the slanted piece on, and then it's like, okay, now it's flat, but it's way too high. What do I do now? It's way too high. I tried to set the toilet down on it, and the toilet's rocking and rolling side to side like it's a space shuttle simulator. Like, this is not just a throne for doing your business. This is like flying a jet, you know? This is like being on an airplane. This is like every visit to the toilet is also an adventure in acrobatics or something. And that wasn't cool. So I took the toilet back off. Like, that's not right. And I ended up, what I had to do, I had to build out a new subfloor all the way around the toilet to raise the floor half an inch, which I did. So, you know, got the wood, built up a new subfloor, put that in, and then put the toilet back on. So I built the new subfloor all the time on my knees. So I spent more time on my knees in the past few days doing this than, you know, probably over the past few months. But on my knees the whole time, bending over with the drill, bending over, tightening the screws, and putting in the subfloor, then putting the toilet back on. And when that's all said and done, do you realize how much appreciation you get for a toilet? Because I didn't have any other place to go. I was, you know, I live out in the country. I was walking outside, just going outside for most things. And it's great to have a toilet again, you know? And it's humbling. It's humbling because my wife was joking. She said, hey, it's like living in a, you know, a developing nation again. Like, here we are without basic toiletries. Yeah, that's humbling. It makes you rethink, you know, the luxuries that we have in life. But when I got that water line connected and I got the toilet to fill back up and I could flush the handle, I'm like, yay, this is working again. There was a sense of real luxury, which sounds funny because in our world today, most people think of luxury as like a really high-end vehicle or a boat or a luxury house or whatever. But for me and my wife and at that moment on that day, luxury was having a toilet that flushes. That's quality of life. Think about it. Now, could I have called in a plumber to do all that instead? Yes, absolutely. Would that have saved me hours of time and frustration? Absolutely. But I would have learned nothing from that. I would not have had the appreciation that I now have for the toilet. And by the way, I don't know if you know the history of the toilet, but it took hundreds of years for the modern day toilet to be invented. I know you may think this is odd. This doesn't qualify to be included in a faith-based sermon, but oh, it does. Because for hundreds of years, the toilets did not have the water trap in them, which is the result of the S-shaped like plumbing in the porcelain toilet, where there's an amount of water that's trapped in the middle that prevents gases from coming up into the toilet. So for hundreds of years, and the history of Europe in particular, they did not have what you and I would consider to be a modern-day toilet. They had something quite horrific that I'm not even going to go into. And so even the kings and queens and princes of the day, even the bishops, even the priests, they did not have the luxury that you have right now because of the simple toilet invention that is now deployed everywhere around the Western world. And if you've never done any of the plumbing yourself, then I don't even mean with a toilet, but just water lines or faucets or under the kitchen sink or what have you, make a point to learn some of that. Make a point to get in on some of that plumbing. Learn how it works. Or if you're building something and you can do so in a safe manner, you know, swing a hammer, right? Use a drill. Like, get involved, get hands-on with the projects. And I know many of you are, especially if you're involved in greenhouses or growing food or permaculture, things like that. Get hands-on, because there is nothing beneath you. There is no shame in fixing your own toilet, folks. There's no shame in shoveling mud out of a greenhouse or in, you know, getting your hands dirty. I love getting my hands dirty in the soil and the gardening and the sprouting. I love that. There's no shame in that at all. There's no shame in having dirt on the knees of your pants because you were on your knees planting tomatoes. And I say, in the spirit of humility, get on your knees. Get on your knees. Even if you're just getting on your knees to repair something, just the physical act of getting on your knees and getting back up again, it's a reminder that we've got to be mobile. We've got to be capable. And especially as we are facing very difficult times ahead with an unknown future, probably facing financial catastrophes, civil unrest, different forms of revolt or disagreement, wars between nations, supply chains being disrupted, if not destroyed. The more you know how to do, and the more you're willing to humble yourself and get your knees dirty, get your hands dirty, and do those things yourself, the better off you're going to be as the supply chain suffers these problems. You're going to be more capable, more knowledgeable, more practical, and that's going to enhance your resilience and your preparedness given what's coming. And then as you become more capable, you'll find yourself able to give more to others, to lend assistance, to help them with skills or to help them with material goods, if you have been blessed with material goods. You know, for example, I've been in the process of giving away a lot of things. And some of those are emergency medicines and some of those are emergency sanitation items. And we've been blessed here at this organization with donations, and we've been blessed with gifts from various providers. And I often tell them, whatever you want to send me, and we will distribute it. Some of it will stockpile for future distribution. A lot of it will distribute right now. So we're able to give out a lot to a lot of people, like literally placing it in their hands. Just the other day, actually it was Saturday night, I dropped off a box of some emergency medicine and some supplements and what else was in there. Oh, and I threw some goldbacks in there too, at a local place that's used by some people that need some help, and we're ready and welcoming the gift. And I've been giving away a lot of things to people who have pets or people who are part of veterinary organizations. And I've still got donations lined up for some veterinarian organizations across the country as well. It's important to be a conduit for resources so that we can redirect them to others who need them. And Proverbs 11 speaks to that too in a later verse. Let's see, what is it? Verse 24. Yeah, here it is. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. You see, and that's what I have lived, and I have seen that again and again in my own life, you know, in just the way God's economy works. God's economy is not based on limited scarcity. God's economy is based on unlimited abundance and wealth. And the way that you actually attract more wealth is by giving it away, being a conduit for the redirecting of sometimes material goods or sometimes wealth that others need. And I've seen that again and again and again. And it's one of the reasons why I seek out opportunities to share solutions or products or donations with other people. And if you are able to find that in your life, which also it must come from a place of humility, you can't be like a super proud person. No, I deserve it all. Everything belongs to me. I own it. I own it. It's mine. Mine. You know, like Smeagol. Then guess what? You're going to die broke. You're going to die alone with nothing. Because it's a cosmic principle. It's God's economic laws. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. If you withhold, you will come to poverty. But if you give, then you will gain even more. Because you attract abundance when you become an expression of abundance. And you attract resources to you, and you attract actually wisdom when you are humble. So fixing a toilet is not about fixing a toilet. It's an exercise in humility. It's proving to yourself that you can do it. You can do that, that you are not some super special chosen one that never has to touch a floor in your life. No, it's proving that you're a human being like every other human being on this planet, and that you are the brother or the sister of a person that cleans hotel rooms for a living, or a person who does the dishes at a restaurant for a living, which is something that I did in my youth. I worked at a restaurant, and the very first job I had was washing dishes for minimum wage. That was humbling. Talk about humbling. That's one of the worst jobs, but there are people who do that job every single day, and you should not look down upon them for doing that job. There is at least dignity in physical labor. There is dignity in cleaning something. There's dignity in building something. There is dignity in actually doing something that matters in the world. And in many ways, I respect those people so much more than some of the people who just, you know, selling financial derivatives, instruments, collateralized debt obligations, and derivative CDOs of CDOs, and this and that. Is like, so what have you done in reality? Nothing. You're selling a bunch of paper with a bunch of spreadsheets and math on it. But somebody still has to do the dishes. Somebody still has to fix the toilet. Somebody's got to deliver the coal to the coal plant, or somebody's got to raise the food, raise the animals so that you can have a hamburger. There are people in this world that do real things, that milk the cows. And I remember milking my goats years ago. And they're small goats, and that was a lot of work because they had little tiny udders. Like, it would take a long time to get a little bit of milk. It was very humbling. It's like, this is the hardest milk I've ever worked for, man. You know, you learn some interesting lessons about yourself when you do these things. But nothing is beneath us if it needs to be done. So I want to invite you to share that idea. Think about in your life, what are you skipping because you think it's beneath you? And what might you actually just take on as a spiritual challenge? Like, I don't know, in the winter shoveling snow, or in the summer mowing the lawn, or edging your lawn, or whatever. Some kind of menial task. That's why a lot of people volunteer at places like soup kitchens, because there is a spiritual truth in making food for others, in being in the kitchen and preparing the food and serving it for others. And that counts. And so find opportunities where you can humble yourself and learn some practical skills. And in doing this, you're going to be more prepared for what's coming. You'll be more resilient. You'll be more capable, more hands-on. You will save all kinds of time in the future because you'll know how to do these things. You might even shock your friends or family members, like, you know how to do that? You know, whatever that thing is. You can swap out a kitchen faucet? Really? You know how to do that? Well, you can learn how to do that. And you can install a new washing machine, a clothes washer, or a dishwasher. Yeah, you can learn how to do that. You will be more ready for what's coming. You'll be more humbled, and you will be more in alignment with God. And I don't mean to sound contrite or anything, but there's a spiritual truth to this. Humble yourself in your day-to-day actions, and God will see you as the more humble person that you are growing to become. Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty and do these things. And I said earlier that my great-grandfather was a minister for the Assembly of God Church, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier. But my grandfather was a part-time beekeeper, and he would do things that still amaze me to this day, like one time a hive of wild bees just showed up on a tree. You know how sometimes wild bees will form a colony and they'll all just show up like collecting themselves in a giant clawed shape on a tree branch. Well, he would go out there. I saw him do this myself. He would go out there without a bee suit and capture the whole hive. He would capture an entire colony of wild bees and he would put it in a beehive. And he didn't even wear a bee suit. And watching him do that as a child myself, it was like, crazy. Is this guy bulletproof? Like, you know, does he have superpowers? You know, how can someone possibly do that? And you know what the answer is to that? Two things. Number one, he stayed calm. He didn't panic. He didn't wave his hands around. He didn't scream. He didn't run. But also, he got stung. He got stung a few places. And when he got stung, he still didn't panic. And so doing these things doesn't mean it's all going to go perfectly for you. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have setbacks. You might get stung along the way. But when you do get stung, don't panic. Don't freak out. Just experience that moment of pain or that momentary setback and say, that's not going to take me away from my path here. Not going to take me away from my mission. We can move forward. We can learn more. We can do more. At any age, we can continue to learn. And know that doing so puts you more in alignment with God and His plan for you in this realm. As it says here in Proverbs, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and the one who is wise saves lives. And that's what you and I do every day. We save lives. We help people save their own lives, technically, is what we're doing. So that's today's sermon. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. We have many more to come, 98 more to come, 100 sermons in 100 days. Thank you for listening. God bless you. I'm Mike Adams. Take care.